Hey everybody, welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined today for a discussion of The Dark Knight Rises by Mike.
Oh, I thought you were going with the last name. Hey, no, everybody.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Mike has been gone for a long time, right?
Yes. I believe last time I was on the show, we both just had one kid. Could that be true?
That's possible. I thought the last time you were on was the 100th episode.
Hey, never mind. I take it back.
So you had two kids. Right. I only had the one.
Right.
But welcome back. You haven't been on since the 100th episode. This is our 250th. So
it's
you
been a while.
Really have been gone.
I now have 5 kids.
Wow. Great job.
I've been a little busy.
Great job. You can find our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. Find us in the iTunes store or email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Because we're talking about The Dark Knight Rises, of course, we always want to have more of a roundtable discussion. So we have some extra special guests. Also here is Batman.
Hey, how's it going?
And, of course, Bane.
This is my first time on a podcast.
Yeah, actually, I feel like Bane is doing my terrible impression of Sean Connery.
Hello, Money Penny. Things in here don't react too well to bullets, Mr. Wayne.
Actually, what was
that? Gosh. Before we talk about The Dark Knight Rises, this is really awkward. I don't want it to seem insensitive by ignoring a horrible, horrible thing that happened in Colorado, where some people were murdered by a fucking asshole with a gun at a screening of The Dark Knight Rises. I'm not really going to say much about it, A, because that's not really what we do on this show, and B, I'm not mentally equipped to deal with that kind of horror, real-life horror. So just, you know, we are thinking about everybody who's affected, the people that lost their lives, their families, anyone who's affected.
Absolutely.
That guy's an asshole. And please know that we're not insensitive or just ignoring it. It's just not why people tune in, I don't think,
right,
to F This Movie. They tune in for the Bane impressions. What if Bane from The Dark Knight Rises met Bane from Batman and Robin? What do you think that would sound like?
I don't remember what Bane from
Batman.
Okay,
you go ahead. You be Dark Knight Rises Bane.
Hello, Bane. How's it going?
Ah, I'm Bane! Bane! Bane!
That's it.
That was good.
We did a little sketch comedy there, a little improv exercise, everyone. That was not scripted.
That's why we live in Chicago. We came here for the improv, and we stayed for the podcast.
We're going to talk about The Dark Knight Rises spoiler-free for a little while, and then, of course, we will get into spoilers so we can talk about the movie a little more in-depth, although I'm guessing everybody's going to go out and see it this weekend. Hopefully you do. Please don't stay home because of what happened in Colorado. That guy's a fucking asshole, and you can't be scared off by that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. It's horrible, but everybody should be in a movie theater this weekend. If you're not seeing The Dark Knight Rises, then see the best exotic Marigold Hotel.
Yeah.
You know, there are choices, is what I'm saying. So we're going to talk spoiler-free for a little while, but real quick, I want to get right into that discussion. But real quick, Mike, tell me every single movie you've seen since the last time you've been on the podcast.
Okay, so Avatar came out.
Okay.
I don't know if you have any thoughts on Avatar.
Not really, no.
Okay.
I've heard of it.
We'll move on. You asked me what I've seen.
Yeah, just throw me like the best thing you've seen.
Quite honestly, and I'll be brief, the best I've seen, a lot of stuff that I had seen already. I made a very conscious effort to start watching movies that I've seen already. I've gotten away from that for way too long. It started in college where it suddenly my eyes were opened up that, oh my God, I haven't seen anything. I went into film school thinking, because in my own little world here in the suburbs, please, I'd seen a black and white movie. I got this shit down, and then I entered film school and realized, oh my God, I have seen nothing and know nothing, and that was wonderful. So I developed this mentality where if I had 2 free hours, I'm going to fill it with something I had not seen before.
Yeah, yeah.
So whatever. So I'd gotten away from rewatching stuff. So I made a conscious effort recently to do that, and I watched. Honestly, the best thing I watched recently was I rewatched Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know how much. How much we've talked about it actually on the podcast.
Not that much, I don't think.
I'm a big fan, like probably most of you are. I won't go into why I feel it's a great movie, but I will say this, and this is going to sound corny, but that movie gave me a gift, for want of a better word, and that when it Film school, it didn't ruin movies for me, but it taught me to look at movies in a very different way. It sucked a lot of the magic out of movies, but I, you know, I can enjoy movies on a different level now. So now when I watch a movie without even thinking about it, I'm paying attention to things like pace and, you know, editing, camera angles, you know, whatever. And so for whatever reason, when I saw Lord of the Rings in the theater, a 10-year-old Mike came out in me. Like, all that went completely away. Peter Jackson pushed every right button for me every time. You know, when, you know, I think about in spoilers for Lord of the Rings, when Gandalf dies.
Whoa! Don't worry, everybody, he comes back.
And they, you know, and they play that, you know, and they cut to everything's in slow motion. The hobbits are hugging each other and just beautiful music. Like, I literally got goosebumps watching that. And I don't know that a movie before, since, you know, before film school or since, led me to that reaction. Cause again, I'm way, way too conscious of what Peter Jackson's trying to do, but that I lost myself in that movie, unlike any movie I have in years and years and years. So I was just reminded of that rewatching it the other day.
You only watch that one, or did you watch the other two as well? Or are you planning to get to the other
two? Yeah, I plan to get to the other two, but I only most recently watched that one.
When you say 10-year-old Mike came out, like, for real?
Yeah,
like,
no,
like
for real.
Like Quato?
Yeah.
Came out of your tummy, and he was like,
I'm not paying attention to camera angles, Mr. Wayne.
10-year-old Mike is Bane. That's crazy.
It wouldn't be a podcast if I didn't embarrass myself with some stupid story. But when, no, like that movie, I don't know what it
is. Had you read the book?
No, before? Okay. No, and I
when Gandalf died, spoilers, were you at all surprised? Because I wasn't, and I was not familiar with the story, but like, he's Ben Kenobi, of course he dies.
No, because 10-year-old Mike would have been surprised.
Really? 10-year-old Mike had seen Star Wars.
10-year-old Mike was an idiot.
10-year-old Mike was like, don't go back and mess with the original trilogy, Mr. Wayne.
You know, I was listening to...
have my permission to die.
You were much more advanced than I ever was at a young age.
Thank you.
Listening to the Batman podcast that you and JB did last week, and it's wonderful. If you haven't heard it, check it out.
Thanks.
You said in the theater, you're what, 12 years old when that came out?
Yeah.
That even as a 12-year-old, you knew, like, this isn't that great. Like, I can't even...
It was definitely, there was a weird gut thing. The same thing happened when I saw Spider-Man. It's like, this movie gives me so much of what I want, and yet... And it's just... It's
yeah, you were 12. Like, yeah, I find that amazing.
But I think people just instinctively react to story. And that's the problem with both of those movies, is that their stories are kind of shitty. And so you walk away from it feeling weirdly unsatisfied because you haven't been told a good story. You've been shown a lot of things that you want to see, but you just instinctively know that, like, oh, this didn't take me on the arc that I need to go on to feel better about this.
That all makes sense. But young, what was that? So I was 10 or 11 when that came out. That I didn't have that instinct, apparently. Maybe I still don't, but I mean, I mean, at the time, that was the greatest fucking movie. I had the Batman novelization on tape.
Read by Roddy McDowell.
Of
course.
Oh my God.
You can call me the Joker. That's how he says it. Yeah.
Oh, I can't. I'm telling you, I was obsessed. I'm going to geek out for a second because that is amazing. I love the way he said it.
You can call me the Joker.
Well, I was going to go the other way. I got the tape and I'm so excited for the moment where he says, they call me the Batman. Yeah. That's how he says it. They call me the Batman.
That's how Roddy McDowell says everything. Vincent!
Oh, I can't go on. Podcast over. That is amazing.
I read the book and I listened to the book on tape. Like, every night before bed. I was obsessed. Same here. I was obsessed. But, you know, that's part of sort of the fanboy or geek culture, is that, like, we're just excited to see the things that we like, that we tend to, like, overlook a lot of things. Like, who cares? It's Batman on screen. Like, but they're not doing it. Whatever. I mean...
But with Lord of the Rings, I did not... I don't think I saw Gandalf's death come. Of course, it makes sense now. Maybe I should have seen it, but no,
I didn't. All right.
And that movie is just awesome. I had never read the books. I'm not a big fan of, you know, like
reading
or just of fantasy with the elves and the dwarves and stuff. But from the teaser trailer, like that.
Are you super stoked about The Hobbit?
I'm stoked about The Hobbit just because I had. You know, I've seen and loved the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Had I been introduced to the Hobbit you know, had The Hobbit come first, and the teaser that we got is the first thing I saw. No, I don't. No. I don't think it'd be quite as exciting.
I feel like I would have been more excited about a Guillermo del Toro Hobbit.
Because it'd be something different?
Yeah, I just, I worry about Peter Jackson. I worry that he's going back to someplace safe because King Kong was not the success that he wanted it to be, and The Lovely Bones was...
Right.
Boy, if you've seen The Lovely Bones, you know what that movie is. So I just worry. But maybe it'll be great, and... I'll totally see it as soon as it comes out, whatever.
I know he has said it. I think it was in Entertainment Weekly a couple weeks ago that he was worried about. It was one of the reasons he was trying to stay away from The Hobbit.
Yeah, right.
Was he didn't want to go back to something that was comfortable.
Right, which I get.
Right.
So instead he just challenged himself. He's like, I'll do The Hobbit, but I'm going to double the frame rate.
Right.
That'll make all the difference, everyone.
48 frames per second, Mr. Wayne.
I will just talk about one movie. I finally saw Margaret.
Oh, yes.
Kenneth Lonergan's movie that he shot in like the early 2000s and then didn't come out until last year and barely was released. It played in select cities. It did have like a week or two run here at the Gene Siskel Center in Chicago, but most of the showings were sold out because the movie was getting such rave reviews and it was very hard to come by. It just came out on Blu-ray and DVD. I think it's a masterpiece. I really thought it was... I thought it was really, really great, but I'm also completely wrapping my head around it still. Like, I couldn't even necessarily tell you why I think it's so great. It's just like, oh my gosh, this is so compelling, and this is showing me things or addressing things in a movie that I've never seen dealt with in this way.
Did you watch the theatrical cut or the director's
cut? I have not yet watched the director's cut, okay, which comes on a separate DVD. It's about a half hour longer. The theatrical cut is about 2.5 hours. Okay. And again, there's multiple cuts of the movie, because I think Martin Scorsese at one point did a cut. I mean, this movie has a crazy history, so the fact that it's good at all is kind of a miracle. But yeah, I'm really still wrapping my head around it, so I can't go into too much detail except to say, see Margaret. A lot of people aren't going to like it. They're going to be put off by, I think, the main character. They're going to be put off by how talky it is and by how sort of ambiguous the emotions are in the movie. Mm-hmm. Other people will really respond to it. But I think it's definitely a movie worth seeing. I think it's going to take me longer to figure out how I feel about Margaret than it's going to take me to feel out how I feel. What? Mm-hmm. Then it's going to take me to figure out how I feel about The Dark Knight Rises.
Are there dwarves or elves
in Margaret? There's one.
Oh,
just the one. So let's talk about The Dark Knight Rises, because that was my big segue. Because here's the thing. We just saw the movie. I saw it first.
He did.
I saw it 1 hour before Mike.
He did.
But I was at the first show this morning. Mike was at the show 1 hour later. He immediately came over to record this podcast, so we have had no time to process our feelings about this movie.
And in fact, on the way over here, I was thinking about this is the first podcast I've done having just seen a movie for the first time.
Yeah.
This is not going to be easy.
No, right? Not at all, especially with this movie.
Right, exactly. There's a lot going on.
So expectations are crazy high, and it's interesting to see, divorced from the tragedy in Colorado, that this was kind of a crazy week surrounding this movie, because the reviews started coming out, and a few critics who gave the movie... not even necessarily negative reviews, just not as positive as certain members of the fanboy community would like, started getting sort of death threats and comments, and websites were crashed, and people were just up in arms that people weren't loving this movie enough. Now, these were the people that hadn't yet seen the movie.
Right.
They were mad that a critic didn't like a movie they hadn't yet seen.
Right.
And now, I've been trying to avoid, you know, everything about the movie. I don't want to read plot synopsis, I don't really want to read reviews, but I got home and tried to pull up a couple of things, and I started reading a comment section on Badass Digest. And to be fair, if you guys don't read Badass Digest, you should. And the community there, I think, is pretty savvy. It's not like the comment section on Ain't It Cool or IMDb, which is just the bottom of the barrel. But it's interesting. So I don't think those were the people. Those aren't the kind of people that were going to be sending the death threats in the first place.
Right.
But the movie's out, and people have seen it, and I think people are turning on it very quickly.
Turning on the movie.
Yeah. And I think, again, that just, it's a function of expectations. This had to be the best movie ever made. And there are people who are going to think it is, because that's what they went into it wanting it to be.
Right.
And then there's people who are going to be, I think, maybe even overly disappointed by it, because maybe it's not. This morning I was talking on Facebook to our listener and friend Bradley Lang from Australia, who is on the Modern Myth Media podcast. And if you guys really want to get super in-depth on The Dark Knight Rises, head over to Modern Myth Media, because those guys have been covering it like crazy, and they're going to get super in-depth. So check them out for a much, much more sort of elaborate, involved, in-depth discussion on The Dark Knight Rises. But he had asked if I had seen it. I said, no, I'm actually going in a couple hours. And he said, you know, I want to see it again before I really make my mind up. And that's definitely how I feel.
Absolutely.
You know, I talk a lot of times about how seeing a movie a second time, you can see it for the movie it is and not the movie you wanted it to be. And I knew watching this movie the first time through that I was encountering some of that. Because every time it would make a step into something I didn't want it to be, if it was, you know, Selina Kyle making a joke or some weird little plot beat or an overly expository line of dialogue.
There's a few of those.
Yeah, I would really react like, I would kind of wince. And that's me reacting to the movie that I want it to be instead of the movie that it is. So I can go in maybe with better managed expectations, but also this is a huge movie. And I need to at least see it a second time before I really understand how I feel about it. I think with a second viewing or a week's time or a couple days' time, I'm either going to like it a lot more or a lot less.
My fear is mine will be the latter.
Okay. What is your immediate reaction?
Get your death threats ready. My immediate reaction is I'm disappointed. I didn't dislike it. It's not a bad movie.
Yeah.
I really tried not to compare it to The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
I've said on this podcast that The Dark Knight is my favorite comic book movie. I think it's unfair to really try to compare the two, but it was hard.
It is and it isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in the same. It's a sequel to that movie.
No, I know.
It exists in the same. It's not like comparing The Dark Knight to Tim Burton.
Batman. Sure, no, I understand. But I really wanted it to judge it on its own and not compare the two. And that proved to be a little bit difficult. It's not like, I had a friend growing up whose brother adored R.E.M. I mean, his life was R.E.M. And they released New Adventures in Hi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like somebody shot his dog right in front of him. He did not like the album, to say the least. And he was so crushed by it. And I always think of that. Like, when something disappoints me, is in my New Adventures in Hi-Fi. And I won't go that far. There's a lot that I did like about Batman. But, yeah, overall, my feeling is I didn't love it. I didn't like it as much as I had hoped. And I do fear that, I do want to see it a second time, but I do fear that, with some distance, I might like it a little bit less.
Yeah,
and I have not read. You know, I haven't read any reviews. I haven't read anything, so I'm curious to see what other people think.
Yeah,
you know, their angles, but
and the reviews are definitely mixed. Mm-hmm. You know, and by not reading reviews, we are sort of at a disadvantage. Only in that, if you're listening and you have read a bunch of reviews, we may be saying things that you've read 10 other places.
Sure.
And it sounds like we're just repeating what everybody's saying, but we're not. We're just happen to agree with people without realizing it. There's such a fine line, I think, between bloated and epic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where The Dark Knight Rises is.
I lean toward bloated.
On that line. I think it might be as well, because the movies that were coming up in my mind as I was watching it weren't so much Spider-Man 3, which I think is the movie that a lot of people are throwing up. Because, you know, comic book movies sort of traditionally have a bad third installment. You have X-Men 3, you have Spider-Man 3, you have Blade 3.
Yeah. I don't know that that's
Superman 3.
Comic book movies, I think.
Sure, yeah, no, definitely. But they all sort of succumb to the same idea, which is, now that people are familiar with the universe, they start in with sort of the fan service. And so they throw in all these characters and references to the comics. Look at, you know, with every subsequent movie in the Burton series, we were getting new major characters to the point where by Batman and Robin, they had three heroes and three villains, plus all the supporting players. And it obviously was, that's not the problem with that movie, but it's a symptom of a larger problem. Yes. And that was my reaction a little bit when I started hearing about The Dark Knight Rises, which is just, okay, it's going to have Catwoman, even though she's never referred to as Catwoman.
Right.
Selina Kyle. It's going to have Bane, but then it also has Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing some character. It has Marion Cotillard playing some character. You know, it's like, and because these are movie stars, we know that they're going to have bigger parts, you know. So it's like, oh, is this movie going to be able to service so many characters? And I'm not. So the movies that were popping up in my head, honestly, were like the later Matrix movies and like the third Pirates of the Caribbean movie. And those movies are mostly hated by everybody. So I don't mean to suggest that The Dark Knight Rises is similar to those movies in quality, but there's just a feeling of, did the director let this get away from him? Is it a situation of trying to cram too much into this one movie? And I don't know if I'm disappointed or not. I think I liked the movie overall because there were a lot of things in it that I liked. Mm-hmm. And because I like Christopher Nolan as a director, and because he tends to mask a lot of his shortcomings as a storyteller with incredible cinematography and editing and music. So the thing just keeps moving forward at this pace. So it feels like you're going somewhere. But I think the more that people sort of, like Prometheus earlier this summer, I think the more people start to pick this movie apart, the more it will not stand up to much scrutiny.
Do you feel, you said there, you know, we had a lot of characters, a lot of things going on. It might have been too much for him to handle. Do you think maybe I feel like maybe had he taken a different approach, it would have been, he could have juggled those characters.
Okay. What that approach might have been, or maybe can you not say?
You know what? I'll wait for spoilers.
Okay. You know, I appreciate the fact that he does try and tie it into the overall story that he was telling. It's not like that original Batman series where just every movie is a standalone thing.
Right.
Having said that, I think this is the movie that I'll revisit the least, not only because I might like it the least of the three Nolan Batmans, and I'm not sure about that yet, but I might. But also because I don't think it works as sort of a standalone movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I could only see myself watching this after watching Batman Begins and The Dark Knight,
Right. Either
of which I could watch on their own at any time.
Right.
I was also a little bit disappointed that it's not really a sequel to The Dark Knight. In fact, in a lot of ways, it ignores much of The Dark Knight. I don't want to get into specifics, but I think this movie is much more closely tied in to Batman Begins than it is The Dark Knight. I think there's a few plot developments that happen in the middle chapter that it addresses.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Honestly, maybe it is the death of Heath Ledger.
That's what I was wondering when watching it. Like, I wonder if that's...
Maybe he wanted the Joker to play a larger part, you know. But again, The Dark Knight... And by the way, The Dark Knight, the more you talk about The Dark Knight, when you start to break down the logic of that movie, like, it doesn't hold up. And there's all that stuff with Harvey Dent that doesn't really work. I mean, The Dark Knight, I don't think is as perfect a movie as it's held up to be. But it's one of those movies that, to quote film critic Hulk, once again, the way that he described The Avengers, The Dark Knight works in all the ways it needs to work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a flawed movie, but the things that are great about it are so great that you can overlook the flaws.
I always thought for The Dark Knight was the... for all of its flaws, it for me at least, and I think for a lot of people, it was the comic book movie or easily the Batman movie we probably all wanted, whether we knew we wanted it or not.
Yeah.
It's a Joker movie.
I do think there's a lot of people that would disagree, honestly. I think there's people that still prefer the Batman, the Burton Batman, or Batman Returns, or some people have been chiming in.
I didn't mean to say everybody.
Right. But some, definitely. But again, it's the kind of character, and because it's this long-running, established, iconic character and comic book, it's like there's room for all these different interpretations. It's just that this interpretation struck a chord with so many people.
Well, and throughout Batman's life as a comic book character, I mean, he's gone from,
he's flown around in spaceships, right, with, exactly, like, little bat mite and everything. I mean, like, right, it's been all over the place.
He's resembled the TV show at times.
Yeah, right, definitely.
And, yeah, and obviously, yeah, as you guys covered last, in the last podcast with, Frank Miller comes along and...
Right. There's a tendency to try and say, like, no, this is the one that's just like the comic. It's like, well, this is the one that's just like the comic during the years, correct, that you read it,
right,
but that, that doesn't mean that this is the only comic, the only interpretation of Batman.
Right.
We're getting off of topic here.
Right.
So I'm disappointed that The Dark Knight Rises doesn't address, I think, even a lot of the themes that The Dark Knight tried to do. Again, Batman Begins is very much about setting up the character of Batman. The Dark Knight Rises, The Dark Knight, Jesus, this is going to be hard without confusing those two. The Dark Knight then ups the stakes by saying, okay, this guy becomes this, now the reaction is this.
He, created the Joker,
right,
essentially, right.
And so now the threat is greater, but on a more sort of meta level, it's about this notion of anarchy versus fascism, and definitely sort of a 9/11 movie, I think. It's like, what is the correct response to this? And is, the fascism of Batman, is that the way we want to go to deal with this threat? So there's ideas at work in The Dark Knight. And The Dark Knight Rises, I think, tries to do some of the same stuff. It's sort of a... It's if The Dark Knight is about 9/11, then The Dark Knight Rises is sort of about the collapse of Wall Street.
Yes.
But my issue there is that I feel like the movie is on the wrong side of that argument.
Yeah.
The movie is a little bit on the side of the millionaires.
Yes.
And that's...
I don't think a little bit on the side of the...
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
That's not what we want.
Yeah, I had that in mind when I was watching it. I completely agree. It seemed to be on the side of the millionaires, and I was waiting for a twist, if you will. Like,
right.
No, I don't think it's going to stay this
No,
course,
and in fact, it only solidifies
yeah.
that point. And I wonder if that's going to affect the way that people feel about it, even on a subconscious level. That
it could, it might.
That people aren't able to identify with sort of the central message of
right.
the movie, because most of the people that are going to see The Dark Knight Rises are not the 1%.
Right.
I don't know. We should probably get into spoilers, because again, if people are listening to this, they've probably seen it. If they haven't yet seen it, I feel like everybody's going to, so
yeah.
It doesn't really need a recommendation from us.
But if you're looking for one, see it.
Yeah, definitely. If nothing else, to be part of the conversation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not positive that he stuck the landing. Do you think it was possible for him to make a movie that satisfied
no
people?
Well, I shouldn't say it was impossible, but I think it very difficult
okay.
to make it. But even with that said, it's not as if this movie, I think, and again, like I just saw it,
yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
But it's not like this movie is a better movie than The Dark Knight. We just we're not satisfied because it's just simply not The Dark Knight. Does that make any sense at all? Like.
That the movie's problem isn't just that it's not The Dark Knight, that the movie has
right.
its own problems?
Well, I don't know. Never mind.
So see The Dark Knight Rises. You're probably going through it already, if you haven't already. Okay, so now we're going to spoil specific aspects of the movie, but again, that's probably why you're listening, to hear us be more specific. Spoilers for The Dark Knight Rises, starting now. The movie tries to do... so much, and yet I'm not 100% positive what exactly it's trying to do. Because again, I understand exactly what Batman Begins is trying to do. I understand exactly what The Dark Knight is trying to do. What The Dark Knight Rises is trying to do seems a little less clear. Is it about the completion of Bruce Wayne's journey, that he comes to terms with his parents' death, that he no longer wants to die, but instead wants to live? Is it about him feeling like my work here as Batman is done and Gotham City no longer needs me? Because that's sort of where the movie ends up.
I feel like it's the first one.
Okay.
That it... But, well, I mean, does the movie end up there? I mean, he...
For Bruce Wayne.
Well, for Bruce Wayne, but not right. for Batman.
I guess, but, you know, Michael Caine sets up early on in the movie, and Michael Caine... Characters make a lot of choices in this movie that don't make a lot of sense to me. Michael Caine quitting and leaving doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
They don't do anything with that,
no, by the way. Because then he comes back after he thinks Bruce Wayne is dead just to cry and feel horrible.
Right.
When Bruce Wayne's not really dead, so he's just letting Alfred feel right. horrible.
Exactly.
Apparently so he can wrap up Alfred's little fantasy, like he makes this plan. Oh, I know what I'll do. No, just tell him you're alive right. and save the old man some fucking grief.
I can just picture him running around Florence being like, is this a restaurant he goes to, Adam?
Right, Jesus. How many restaurants are there in Florence?
Table for one, Mr. Wayne. You have my permission to dine.
That's the worst fucking joke I'm going to make today. So...
I'd argue the best joke.
As soon as Michael Caine starts telling that story about I have this fantasy... A, it's Good Will Hunting, everyone. But B, I was like, oh, this is the Inception moment. The movie's going to end with, okay, they're going to be at the fucking place yeah. and he's going to see him. And okay, so I was not surprised when we landed in that place.
Right.
But he says, I will know that you've moved on. So that's what this movie is about. It's about him moving on. What allows him to move on? The decision that he wants to live and not die?
That, yes.
But that suggests that Batman was about was a death wish.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't that reduce the character to I know how I'll get killed. Stopping crime in a cape. I don't know. It's a little muddled for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, he says himself he never had... I guess he did. He does have a bit of a death wish. I mean, he doesn't have, you know... Alfred's his family and after... But he didn't with Rachel, I guess.
I just don't understand. I mean, and I'm okay with that beat and the convenient blind man in the cave prison saying, like, no, you have to want to live, and that'll make you better. That'll make you a better fighter. It'll allow you to climb out of here. I'm okay with that beat, except that really closes off the arc of Bruce Wayne and Batman. I don't know.
Is it possible that's how he felt for this? You know, since Rachel died,
yeah,
that's how he felt. But I'm not saying that then. Yeah. Excuses.
But let's talk about the structure of the movie a little bit, because I have some problems with it. And I don't want this to be just a complaint podcast, but unfortunately, you know, when you see a movie, especially one with problems, like, that's kind of what you tend to talk about, is you're trying to process all the things that are kind of wrong with it.
Yeah, this movie, Dark Knight podcast is...
Do we do that? Nitpick the problem? Yeah. And some of these are nitpicks, honestly.
No.
Like, when Catwoman makes some groan-worthy joke, right. or Matthew Modine speaks in the movie, that's kind of a nitpick, you know? Or when Joseph Gordon-Levitt all of a sudden reveals, like, I've been communicating with my partner down there. A, we didn't know you had a partner. B, how have you been doing that?
I have some problems with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Interesting. Too. He was one of my favorite things about the movie.
Ooh, okay.
The movie's full of weird shortcuts like that, though, and I mean, Christopher Nolan's kind of famous for that, but it's like, people conveniently explaining things. I mean, the moment where Catwoman she's trying to get her hands on this, what's it called? The All Clear or whatever.
Yeah.
Then that's her big motivation for the entire movie, is she wants to wipe out her record. Okay. That's kind of thin, I feel like, but at one point she corners the guy who's supposed to give it to her, and he tells her what it is, but we're to assume that she already knows what it is. You mean the device that will wipe out everything? It's like, okay, we're not dumb, Christopher Nolan, and you have always been good about not treating us like we're dumb, right. You know, sometimes to a fault. Sometimes he can be a little too obtuse, but I felt like there was some really overly expository moments. Even the end, and again, we're way into spoilers. Batman has this nice little exchange with Commissioner Gordon that kind of closes their arc.
Yes.
And I'm fine with that. And he says, like, sure. Being a hero is all different kinds of things. Sometimes it's putting a coat around a boy.
Yeah.
And it's a nice moment. And we flash back to the shot in Batman Begins. And then fucking Gary Oldman stands in the street and goes, Bruce Wayne? Yeah. Like, no. We know it's Bruce Wayne. We've spent three movies with him. and now you know it's Bruce right. Wayne. We can read it on your face. We just saw the flashback. We don't need you to go, Bruce Wayne?
There were, and you just...
Get a load of this motherfucker!
There were a few moments like that. I'm trying to think. There was another one that I felt smacked you upside the head.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't think of it right
Again, now. Those are the things that I kind of wince at, and yeah. I wonder if on a second viewing I'd be more forgiving of those.
Sure.
So structurally, the movie starts about 8 years after The Dark Knight. Yes. Gotham is totally clean, thanks to the Dent Act, and that's one of sort of two ways that the movie ties in to The Dark Knight. One is the legacy of Harvey Dent as a hero, and two is Bruce Wayne apparently brooding for 8 years over the death of Maggie Gyllenhaal. I wanted more pictures of Rachel in the house. I wanted some of them to be Katie Holmes, but some of them to be Maggie Gyllenhaal, just to fuck with our heads. I felt like both of those were kind of weak ties into The Dark Knight. Those weren't the ways that I wanted the movies to connect, sure. necessarily.
Right.
So it's been 8 years, and he's moping around, partially because he's hurt, partially because he's on the run, partially because the city is in better shape, partially because, or 100%, as he says, because he's sad about the death yeah. of Rachel Dawes. I don't buy several of those, but okay. So... We spend a lot, like the first hour of the movie, with him just as Bruce Wayne, this sort of broken man. And then he gets the courage to be Batman again because a threat appears. And then he's Batman for a little while. And by the way, a lot of people I think are not going to like this movie because there's not a lot of Batman
in it. I was going to get there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll come back to it. So he's Batman for a little while. And then he fights Bane. And Bane famously breaks his back.
Yes.
Because that's what happens in the comics. And then we spend another 40 minutes, 45 minutes of him as a broken man again. And then he has to learn to be Batman for the second time in the same movie. And I'm not suggesting necessarily that one of those be cut out entirely, but maybe I am. Or you're Christopher Nolan. You love to fuck with the chronology of your movie. Start with him fucking with the broken back. In the prison.
Yeah.
He's been broken even for 8 years. That's why he's been gone. Who knows? I don't know. But I just feel like to go through that same arc twice in the same movie is repetitive and tanks the momentum a little bit.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I also, just going back to the lack of Batman, like that was one of the things that stuck out like a sort of thumb. I don't need a wall-to-wall Batman, but I want whatever's not Batman to be more interesting than Batman. I didn't necessarily feel that way.
Right. Well, again, the movie seems to want to... I think Christopher Nolan is trying to pull back a little bit further this time. So in Batman, where it's on the one guy, and then Dark Knight, he pulls back a little bit further, and now it's these two forces going at one another, and now for this one, I feel like he wants to pull back all the way to the city.
Yes.
And see, I mean, this movie's dealing with a lot of different things in the city. The citizens of Gotham, the police, the criminals, the terrorists, the 1%. Millionaires, right? The 1%.
Poor.
But I'm not entirely sure that he figured out to what end.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't... And lots of people may already have this figured out, so I apologize if we sound ignorant. And again, I'll chalk it up to having just seen it. I'm not entirely sure what the movie is about or what it's trying to say.
Right.
So for it to not have a lot of Batman, you feel like, okay, well, there's not a lot of Batman because it's about these other things. But
I
to what end?
Well, I think one of the reasons we don't get a lot of Batman, and again, we're in spoiler territory. And the things I love seeing Batman do, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was doing.
Okay,
like
detective work.
Yes,
yeah,
and that, and it, I didn't take me that long to figure out why.
Yeah,
that was the case, but I
see. I did not think they were going to go there.
I didn't until I kept turning to my wife Christy, saying, "Why are we watching him?"
Yeah.
Why are we watching him do it? Like, he got to a point where it was really bugging me. And then, so in my head, I'm trying to figure out, like, why do we have to watch this cop do all that work? And then it dawned on me, like, oh, because, you know, Rob, you know, as I'm watching, I'm like, maybe he'll be Rob. I mean, they don't have the same name. it's not Dick Grayson, but I was hoping, like, maybe we'll get Nightwing. And you need to establish that Nightwing, very much like Batman, is a detective and can do a lot of things that, you know, the cops can't. But as I was watching that, most of what Joseph Gordon-Levitt was doing, I just wanted to see Batman doing that.
See, and I was actually okay with it. I had an issue early on when he very casually is like, I know that you're Batman, and Bruce Wayne seemed totally fine with that. Very casual, about like, okay, cool, let's talk. I felt like that moment was sort of rushed. But watching him do all those things, I actually was okay with, even if it never paid off that, okay, he's picking up the mantle and he's Robin or whatever, because that smacked sort of a fan service to me.
Sure.
But I was okay with it because, again, at least it made some sort of sense thematically in terms of what the movies have been trying to be about, which is Batman as a greater symbol.
Yes, right. I understand
and here's
that.
A guy who's inspired by Batman, who's constantly trying to do the right thing. I mean, I thought all the stuff with him at the end, walking across the bridge, getting the kids on the bus. I mean, I thought all that was actually handled really well.
Yeah.
And not super cheesy, where it's like, let's move all the cranes so he can swing across.
Then maybe it's a problem with me, because I totally get that, agree with that, understand that, but maybe I'm the asshole that just wants to see, not all of it, don't get me wrong, overall I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I like him usually, but I couldn't get past the fact that we keep cutting to Bruce Wayne with a broken back, not doing anything.
Well,
like,
right, and that's part of the...
I understand why he did it and everything you just said. Yeah,
right.
That makes total sense.
But I mean, the movie almost needed to do more of it or less of it. It almost had to do more of it, like, okay, while Batman and Bruce Wayne are out of commission, here's what, you know, a few people in Gotham are doing.
Right.
But because we do spend so much time with Bruce Wayne and Batman, at least in the first hour or whatever, again, I feel like the movie needed to start from the point where he's laid up in that prison.
Right.
And then you can fill in the backstory or whatever. But let's talk about Selina Kyle. And Anne Hathaway's performance is getting very good reviews. A lot of people are saying she's the best thing in the movie.
I wouldn't say that.
I don't know if I would either.
I like Anne Hathaway. I'm going to get flamed for this because I feel like... You know, I might be in the minority with that, but I overall like her. And I thought she was fine in this.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, I tend to like her as an actress. I tend to not like her so much in interviews and stuff.
Okay.
She's super actressy, if that makes any sense. I don't know. I thought she was fine. There were things that I liked a lot that she did, but I felt a little bit like, these Christopher Nolan Batman movies have always been good about reinterpreting or reinventing some of these iconic characters and sort of rebuilding them from the ground up. And the Catwoman that we got in this movie, to me, felt very much like the Catwoman out of the comic book, which is a good and a bad thing. You know what I mean? That, like, okay, yeah, people are going to respond to that. They get this idea that, like, okay, she's not entirely good, but she's also not bad either.
Right.
She's a thief, but she has some decency, and we never quite know what side she's on. And I like that they play all that.
Yes.
At the same time, there was no element sort of surprise in terms of, like, you sit down to watch
her character?
Or the way that her character has been written.
Yeah, I'd agree.
It's exactly what we thought Selina Kyle was going to be in this movie.
Right.
But I think the bigger problem is, what is Selina Kyle doing in this movie?
I would completely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you could pick her out and not lose a beat.
She seemed to be just this a convenient screenwriting tool. So when we need Batman to be led to Bane, she's the one to do it.
Yes.
And then when we also need him to be set up, she's also the one to do it. And then when we need Batman
saved,
she's the one to do it. Or when we need, you know, somebody to usher this thing from to another point in the city, she's the one to do it.
Right.
And honestly, again, this is just me. It was a little jarring in the Nolan universe to watch two people sort of in costumes fighting side by side. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, no, because I we're so used to just, no, it's really just Batman. He's right. The, and to see the two of them fighting and talking to each other, it seemed,
oh, that's interesting. That didn't,
it felt more comic booky than his other movies have felt.
Right.
Although I just rewatched Batman Begins in anticipation, and that movie's way more comic booky than I remember. Like, okay. That Gotham City is very sort of over-designed, because then you get to Dark Knight, and it's just Chicago. Yeah, it's like, hey, that looks like any city, but Gotham City in Batman Begins is much more stylized.
Right. Where do you come down on Bane?
Well, that's interesting.
Okay. I'm sorry if you don't want to...
No.
Selena.
No. I mean, I know people are reacting a lot to his voice, and for the first couple minutes, I was really distracted. Not that he's talking through the thing, Mr. Wayne, but... there was this controversy that he was unintelligible in early, you know, when they showed some footage maybe last year. And there was a debate, okay, did Christopher Nolan go back in and re-record the dialogue? To me, it really sounds like he did.
Yeah.
Because all of Bane's lines sound looped.
Yep.
He doesn't feel like he's talking in the same space as the other actors. They feel like he's talking from the sky.
Could you understand him?
For the most part.
I thought so too.
Yeah.
My wife had some trouble at times, and yeah, I guess I did too. Like, there were moments that I wasn't entirely sure what he was saying, but there's moments I wasn't entirely sure what Batman was saying.
Yeah, right. I guess. Let me ask you a question, then we'll get back to Bane. There's a moment in the movie where Batman and Selina Kyle are talking, and she disappears, and he says, "So that's what that feels like."
Yes,
he's alone at this point.
Yes.
There's no one around.
Okay, I had the exact same thought. The only thing I can think of is just when he's like a method actor.
Yeah.
He's in the suit.
Right.
He's got to use his voice.
Would the line not have gotten a bigger laugh, which is what it's designed for? Yeah. And there's several of those in this movie. And again, I'm not opposed to that, but it did take some getting used to, because these movies have never been overtly jokey. And in fact, my least favorite moment in Batman Begins is... Jim Gordon saying, like, I gotta get me one of these, and it's like, oh, that's hacky.
Right.
And there were several of those in this movie. But I just felt like it would have gotten a bigger laugh if he switched to his own voice.
You're probably right.
And would have been some sort of meta joke on, like,
yes,
the Batman voice. Agreed. So he should have gone back. What I'm saying is, fix it.
What he's saying is, he should have directed this.
I almost did. I was like, no. This is Chris's baby. Let him finish it. So Bane, I mean, I like Tom Hardy. I liked him. I liked his physical presence. I liked how just big and intimidating he was. I liked the mask. I liked the idea of him as sort of this cult leader, where the Joker was very much a force of anarchy. Bane is much more methodical and organized. I liked the moment in that first scene during the airplane break or whatever, when he tells the guy, like, no, they're expecting one of our guys are going to be dead. And the guy doesn't react. He's like, okay, this is my job. This is my mission. But I wish that the movie had gone further with that idea, because at a certain point, Bane, like a lot of the characters, just becomes a deliverer of exposition.
And I think that was my problem. I agree. The Bane they set up in the beginning wasn't the Bane we got later in the movie.
And they completely cut his nuts off by the end.
Oh, absolutely.
By taking away the thing that I liked about him, which is that he's this organized cult leader. Yes. Oh, no, he's just the fucking muscle.
He's the Bane from the Schumacher.
I'm Bane!
Right. No, it was completely anticlimactic. Yeah. And to his... dark. I'm 100% with you. But yeah, no, I was on board.
Yeah.
And
again, sort of a reinterpretation of the... I have not read Nightfall, so...
I did, but a long time ago.
Okay. I know he broke Batman's back.
Right.
That's as much as I know. And again, he gets, shot or whatever by Selina Kyle, and I'm okay with that beat in theory, except that then there's a little joke afterwards, and it's like, no, we don't need the joke afterwards. It's okay to just sort of take this seriously, you know. Okay, but let's talk about Talia al Ghul.
Okay.
Because here's where the internet is bad. Because we've known forever, right, that Marianne Cotillard is playing Talia al Ghul.
Yes, I will admit this. Yes, we did know that
forever. Like a year ago.
Right. when I was watching the movie, I forgot about that.
Oh, I did not.
And then, yeah, when it was revealed, I remembered, oh, yeah, this is not this is not news.
And, you know, people were just so anxious for any bit of information about the movie, for anything they could find out. And so I understand why everybody wants to break that story. But the movie does play it as a twist.
Right.
And to lots of people, it probably will be, who aren't reading the same geeky sites or whatever that we do. But so I was a little disappointed that twist was ruined. At the same time, what good does the twist do?
As someone who again, forgot what the twist was.
Yeah.
It was very unsatisfying.
It's just twist. Like, no, it was me in charge.
Right.
So?
Right. And then even her motivation doesn't
right.
make a whole lot of sense to me.
Just, I want to finish what my dad started, which is destroy Gotham.
Fuck my dad, but then you killed him, so
I got over it, right.
Yeah, I got over it, and I'll finish what he started. Yeah, it just...
But you didn't even understand exactly why she wanted to finish what he started. I mean, when Liam Neeson gives the speech, like, we have to burn it down to build it back up.
Yep.
That kind of made sense. I mean, you didn't agree with him because he was a madman, but like, okay, I see there's a logic to what you're doing.
He said, get under the bed, Batman.
And then he punched a wolf. And her motivation doesn't make as much sense, or any sense, and especially when they're like, okay, we're going to blow up Gotham, but we're going to do it in such a way that takes 5 months.
Yeah.
But again, I understand them wanting to make Gotham sort of a symbol of, like, look what we can do, you know, what just the people can do if they rise up and take out the millionaires. And then luckily Batman's there to save the millionaires and all their money. Because that's revealed, too, and that's just depressing. Like, on the one hand, you want to say, like, okay, interesting, this is about sort of this insurgency. That's what's so interesting about The Dark Knight, is that there's such complexity to these two characters. Not really to Joker. I mean, there's a complexity to Joker, but, like, you know that what he's doing is evil. But there is to Batman, because you want to be on his side. But if it's a 9/11 sort of allegory, he's George Bush.
Yeah.
He's turning it into a fascist state. And it's like, well, I think you're on the right side, but I don't know about your methods. And is this the answer? There's a complexity there. Whereas this, I feel like there needed to be more complexity with at least the villains. Because there's not any more, really, with Batman. But with to some extent, we needed to be on Bane's side.
And
because we are the 99%, right?
Right, so exactly.
Instead of branding us as just murderous terrorists or whatever, we need to be like, okay, yeah, he's got a point. Or, you know what I mean?
Is there an attempt? Is there even an attempt?
I don't think so.
I can't think of one either.
I mean, except for when he's saying, like, you know, Catwoman has that cool speech that in the trailer had so much promise and then the movie isn't delivered on, but where they're dancing and she says, like, you can only live this high for so long. I don't remember what the quote is, but
yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the shit's gonna come down, basically, is what she tells him, and that's not really delivered on necessarily again because all the millionaires are restored by the end of the movie.
No.
I think the Talia al Ghul reveal perhaps could have worked if it happened at about halfway through the movie.
Sure, she's barely in the movie,
right?
Honestly,
right. She spends most of it just in the background being told where to go by other characters.
Right.
And then she reveals herself to be the villain, and then she's killed in a car crash.
Right. Right.
And it's like, okay, but what... Again, what was the purpose of this if she's designed to be sort of the mirror image of Batman, that this is the way that he reacts to the murder of her parents, and this is the way that she reacts to the murder of her parents. And so they're mirrors of one another. And both sort of come to terms with either the death of their parents or what it has turned them into. That could be interesting. Mm-hmm. But does the movie do that?
No.
Okay.
I don't think the movie does much with her character.
No.
At all.
No.
Every time she was on the screen, everything just seemed forced, for want of a better word.
I wasn't complaining when she was on screen. Because she's so pretty.
She is
very, oh my gosh.
She's very pretty.
but had nothing to do. It didn't. And again, because it was ruined for me in every scene, I'm just sitting there knowing, like, oh, right, but you're going to be Talia al Ghul. And right. they show the kid escaping from the prison, and I'm like, oh, right, but you're actually the little girl and not the boy.
That's so funny.
And again, what purpose did that serve? And this movie makes the horrible mistake of delivering a key point of exposition, right? That it's Ra's al Ghul's child, be it boy or girl,
yep.
that escaped from the pit and blah, blah, blah. And it does so via a dream that Bruce Wayne yes. has where he's visited by Liam Neeson. But how could he possibly... You're telling me he has a dream in which he figures out something he couldn't have possibly known?
Liam Neeson...
He has the power to visit you in your dreams.
I told you I'm immortal.
He's Sean Connery?
It's everything I do is Sean Connery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My Bane, my Liam Neeson.
They're going to take you, Mr. Wayne. You have my permission to hide under the bed.
So that was frustrating. There's all these things that are frustrating about the movie, you know? And I don't want to be frustrated by it. And I hate feeling like it's one of these movies. I mean, Spider-Man 3 was such an example of like, hey guys, do one more rewrite and you might have something here. Little fixes change a lot of things, you know? And I don't know if that's the case with The Dark Knight Rises. I don't know if this is a movie that could have been saved by little fixes. Not that the movie necessarily needs saving. I feel like I liked it overall, but I worry that the more we talk about it, the more I'm going to just feel like, oh, that movie has too many problems to be good.
How do you feel about The Dark Knight?
The Dark Knight?
Yeah.
I think it's very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're not as ravenous as many are for it, though, right?
I guess not, because its problems stand out to me a little bit more, or I'm just less accepting of them as a lot of people. But again, what the movie does right, it does so right. I do think it's one of the best comic book movies ever made. I really do. I'd put it in my top three, you know? It's just that I'm just probably reacting to this whole, like, it's a perfect movie. No, it isn't.
Right.
And it makes a lot of the same mistakes, I think, that The Dark Knight Rises does. I just think The Dark Knight Rises does them on a bigger scale, does them throughout the entire movie, as opposed to just kind of here and there.
And would you argue The Dark Knight Rises also just doesn't have those moments or those...
Well, it doesn't have Heath Ledger.
Right.
It doesn't have anything comparable to Heath Ledger, and that's a problem, you know?
It is. Like, with The Dark Knight, when I knew Heath Ledger was working for me, because when he wasn't on the screen, I couldn't wait for him to get back.
Right. But I also don't feel like he hijacked the movie the way that Nicholson does, you know,
in the original Batman. Yeah, not at all.
Dark Knight had a lot more, like, Batman action, mm-hmm. and he got to be a detective.
How do you feel about the action scenes?
In
Dark Knight Rises.
Gosh, I mean, they're okay. I think I liked them overall. I do like Christopher Nolan as a director, and I like the scale at which he works. I mean, he's working on the same scale as, like, a Michael Bay.
Yeah.
But there's something that feels more grounded, more real world, because he's not just using crazy amounts of CGI. It's less showy about what it's doing. He'll allow an effect to... He'll film it for a long time, you know, as opposed to cutting 20 times or whatever.
Well, yeah, I thought the opening with the plane hijacking was really awesome.
Yeah.
It's something I hadn't seen in the way. And yeah, I mean, just to add on to that, I say it doesn't cut away 20 times, you know, really quick. I love how, you know, we saw the plane, you know, like just the way it like
fall
lost
around him.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no, that was super cool.
I thought that was great.
And it was an obvious attempt to sort of mirror the opening of The Dark Knight,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, sort of establish who this villain is and what he's capable of.
Yes.
And again, The Dark Knight, what's so great about that is not only is it just a kick-ass sort of action sequence, but the way that the Joker has orchestrated chaos,
mm-hmm.
and Bane is sort of the reversal of that in that he's orchestrated something very planned out, you know? So I think that works.
Yeah, no, I think it's the... But on the other action sequences, are like, as I sit here, I won't say I forgot about them, but not quite as memorable as I would have liked.
Sure.
Especially like the hand to hand. You know what? And honestly, like maybe part of that honestly is part of the problem with like the hand to hand fight scenes is it's not fucking easy to fight in a big
bat scene. Definitely. So definitely. I mean, and there's really just the two. I mean, there's the one before he gets his back broken, and then there's the second one. And some of it, I think, is they're trying to make the point that he's rusty.
Yeah.
And by the end, you know, he's less rusty, or he's sort of channeling all of his anger. And so I definitely felt that that last fist fight was better because it was just bigger and the hits were harder and it was just two huge guys wailing on each other. There was a weirdness to like seeing so much of the movie play out in daylight.
Yeah.
It's just, it's weird to see Batman on the front steps of City Hall.
It's true.
In daylight, you know, it doesn't have the same effect of like, ooh, it's cool and obscured by night. There were just
as wasted as maybe his character was. I just enjoy the hell out of Michael Caine.
Yeah, definitely.
So I liked him a whole hell.
Yeah, lot. And until he made the decision to leave and then disappear from the second half of the movie, I thought he was great. You know, and I've always loved the relationship between the two of them.
Me too.
And for large parts of the movie, I liked the Bruce Wayne of this movie more than I ever have before.
Yeah. We saw a hell of a lot more
Bruce Wayne. He's almost entirely Bruce Wayne. But, I mean, even the decision to have him try and climb out of that tunnel three separate times. I mean, and I understand. It's like, it goes back to that thing. Why do we fall? So we can get back up. Yep. But
I believe Chumbawamba taught us that.
It's just, I feel like what attempts there were at a theme in the movie were sort of repeated over and over again.
Sure.
And I liked the scale of the whole last sequence. I liked that it involved so many of the characters that we know. So we have Lucius Fox trying to do this thing, and we have Jim Gordon trying to do this thing, and we have Joseph Gordon-Levitt now trying to get the kids on the bus, and we have Selina Kyle driving. I mean, she gets more cool shit to do than Batman, possibly, because she's driving around on that motorcycle.
I'm glad we got to see Commissioner Gordon do something. I was nervous at first.
Yeah.
A lot of him in the hospital.
Yeah.
I was like, haven't you seen Halloween 2? We don't want our star in a hospital bed. Because I love Gary Oldman as Commissioner Gordon.
He's good. Yeah. He's definitely good. I wanted to see more. I liked that it was using all these different characters. Part of me, I have to admit, is a little tired of, you know, because now every movie is a series. It's a trilogy, or it's seven movies, it's based on books, or whatever. And always at the end of that series is the giant battle. And it's Lord of the Rings, and it's Harry Potter.
Yep.
It's going to be the Hunger Games. I think it might even be Twilight, based on the trailer that I saw, that like we can only end with a giant battle. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that this movie kind of climaxes. Yeah. Now, at the same time, like, it makes a little bit more sense because, again, the scope of this movie is all of Gotham, and so you have to finally have all the citizens of Gotham putting their money where their mouth, except for the millionaires, of course. Right. But, you know, the blue-collar cops have to die for the millionaires. that they're all involved in fighting against this threat for their city.
Right.
But it's just a little, like, tiring in terms of, like, okay, everything ends in a giant battle. And I love fight sequences, you know, I love action and everything, but There was just a lot of things that were sort of unsatisfying. Again, I will see it a second time, and either a lot of these problems will disappear, or they will only become more glaringly obvious.
Right, but it now more so than ever after talking about this with you. Like I think we owe it to ourselves to see it again.
Yes.
Yeah, I just have a lot of questions. A lot of questions that maybe would be answered had I, you know, upon a second viewing.
Right.
Maybe not.
And I did not see the movie in IMAX. I would like to see
it. Yeah, same here.
I would like, although I was able to pick out basically every shot and sequence that was supposed to be in IMAX.
Right.
Maybe it would make a difference. All it would change really is the scale.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to fix, I think, a lot of the screenplay problems.
But this is a movie where scale is important, though. So.
Yeah, definitely. And again, I like the scale that Christopher Nolan works on.
Yeah, me too.
So you're feeling sort of about the ending, that once again we think that Batman has sacrificed himself. It just has repeated so many things.
Which, can I say one thing really quick? So Batman...
he goes, Superman, and then he flies the nuclear bomb.
Right, right. Flies a nuclear bomb into the water, and it blows up, and somebody yells out, like, yay, Gotham is saved. And my wife, Chrissy, turns to me and says, until the tsunami comes. Which,
or the radiation and fallout. Like, right. It's a nuclear device. It detonated, like, you can see it.
So I'm sorry, that made me laugh.
So the choice that he makes to make everyone think that he's dead.
Correct.
Even though then it's revealed that, no, he repaired the autopilot.
Yes.
So the Dark Knight ends with a sacrifice that makes sense to me. I'll be the bad guy because the city needs me to be.
Yep.
And this one ends, I will die because... I will let people think I'm dead, not because the city needs to think I'm dead. It's I will think I'm dead so I can stop being Batman, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because it leaves a door open for Robin.
Right.
No.
I don't quite understand. It just flies in the face of what the other movies seem to be about. If Bruce Wayne is willing to just stop being Batman so that he can go... live a happy life somewhere else. Right. That's he wants to retire. Yeah. But that to me seems antithetical to what the other movies have been about.
I completely agree. It hit the same note with me.
So he sort of selfishly just quits. He turns in his resignation and makes everyone think that he's dead. But then leaves clues to the people who would know, like Lucius Fox and Jim Gordon and Alfred. I mean, he basically tells the same people, like, guys, I'm not really dead. Come find me in a cafe. So everything after that, what's your reaction to the reveals after that? I mean, we kind of talked about Robin already.
Right. Because I had the same thought you did, that this is Batman just wanting to enter retirement.
Yeah.
That, you know, didn't sit great with me, but it's, you know, it's fine, I guess. Like, I don't know. I didn't really react either way, because like I said, I figured we were getting the Robin or Nightwing reveal at the end, so just confirmed it. I mean, it's fine. It's cool. Like I think if Batman is not going to live on in that universe, someone needed to. So I'm glad he didn't retire the character Batman completely, because I really would have.
I can't imagine that Warner Brothers would have even allowed him to do so.
Right? No, I know, but I mean, it wouldn't have made any sense to me.
Right.
But also. So, all right, fine, but...
So he ends this trilogy basically just by having Christian Bale retire.
Yeah.
But leaves the door open for a new Batman? I mean, he could just be Robin, but for all we know, he's going to be Batman. Although, I honestly don't think it's going to be like Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I don't either.
Warner Brothers will reboot this or whatever in 3 years, and I think they're just going to go a different way, and...
I'm actually really interested to see what... how they handle the reboot.
Because
it'll happen. Well,
I'm not at all.
Aren't you at all interested to see just what approach they will take? Will they keep it dark? Do they have to now? Sort of follow this path that Christopher Nolan has?
I mean, I guess out of curiosity, like as an answer to that question, sure, I'm interested.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm good. I don't need another Batman movie. Like...
We're going to get another bankruptcy.
I know we are, but it's bankruptcy. It's nothing else.
Yeah.
We have to keep churning these out. But I have a feeling that this movie isn't going to perform to the level that everybody wants it to, because I do think a lot of people are going to come out of it a little bit unsatisfied.
Will it perform to the Avengers
level? I really don't think so.
Yeah.
And that, unfortunately, is now the conversation. Not now the conversation, but even when the Avengers came out, it was like, fuck Avengers, Dark Knight Rises. People hadn't even seen it yet, and now people have seen both, and so of course the question is going to be, what's better, Avengers or Dark Knight Rises? Notice Spider-Man's not in the question.
Sorry, Eric.
But I think Avengers, I mean, I don't think anybody can do Avengers numbers, really. I mean, it's like, it's number two of all time now, or three still?
I think three last I was worried.
Okay. But. You know, Avengers leaves people leave the theater feeling really good.
Yes.
They had so much fun at the Avengers. It's colorful. It's upbeat. It has snappy dialogue. It has these great larger-than-life characters, and it has a lot of flaws also, but you leave the theater feeling really good and like you had a great time and you want to go back. And I don't know how many people are going to leave The Dark Knight Rises feeling that way. Some of that's by design, just right. The universe that Christopher Nolan has set up. It's not a fun universe.
Right.
But I don't know how much repeat business it will do.
I want to go back to see it again for all the reasons
we
discussed, but it's not because I enjoyed myself so much.
Right. I think it's going to feel the most like work of all of his movies. Because I did see Dark Knight, I think, at least a second time.
Yeah, I did.
And I haven't done that for a long time. You know, like, I used to see movies 4, 5, 6 times if I really liked them.
Right.
And that's just gotten harder for me to do. But The Dark Knight was one of these movies that I actually did see more than once in a theater. And I will for Dark Knight Rises, but for different reasons. Not also, because, like, oh, I want that experience again. It's like, I need to figure out how I feel about this.
It's also not a short movie.
No. And I have a feeling that, again, like I said, because of the editing and the music and all that, you feel like you're moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
I worry that on a second viewing, all of the not Batman stuff, which, by the way, is most of the movie, is going to drag.
Yeah.
All the stuff of him in the prison the second time, we're just going to be waiting for him to get out.
I mean, even more so, you know, sitting at home, throwing on a DVD.
Right.
Of it, yeah.
Which is why I say I feel like I'll only watch this to complete. If I watch Batman Begins and Dark Knight,
right,
I'll throw on Dark Knight Rises.
Yes.
But, like, I never put on The Matrix Revolutions. I'll put on The Matrix and then be done. I'm like, ooh, that wrapped up rather nicely. Two other movies don't exist. But I will never put on just Revolutions without watching the first two.
Yeah, I agree.
And I feel a little bit like that for this movie.
Sure.
I take issue, too, with, like, so they cut off Gotham from the rest of the world, and it becomes this weird, not a police state, but, you know, their terrorists have taken over the entire city, basically, and no one can come in or out, right? Meanwhile, everyone can come in! How does that keep everybody's walking, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's walking around with no problem, and Batman's allowed back into the city, like, nobody notices, and his first encounter with Selina Kyle after she betrayed him and he had his back broken and was imprisoned for, I think, 5 months and almost killed. He's really over it. Like, immediately. She's right. Didn't expect to see you. She doesn't say sorry. She doesn't say, didn't expect to see you. He's like, ah, it's all right. I think you're good people. And that scene didn't work for me.
No.
But let's talk about the fact that they are together at the cafe at the end of the movie.
I didn't love that
either.
Because, I'm going back to the, you know, the comic book fan in me. I like that there was always this sexual tension with Batman and Catwoman, right. But that's, you know, about it. I don't see him settling down, having the family that Alfred wants him to have with her.
But, and see, that's not necessarily how I interpret that at the end. And I know I should, because that's the way that it's set up in Alfred's speech early in the movie, where it's like, I'll see you with your wife, and I'll know that you're married, and you've moved on.
That's why I interpreted that.
So when we see him with Selina Kyle, of course it has to be his wife, but I can also just interpret it as, like, they're fucking, because, like, they're both, they have chemistry, and they both wear suits and beat people up. And, I mean, I liked their kiss in the street.
Oh, sure.
Right before they split up or whatever. I thought
wouldn't
that,
you think Bruce Wayne would just, you know, that's his Gotham City girl.
Yeah, no, it doesn't totally make sense to me that she's sitting at the table with him. It doesn't, but I don't think I minded it as much as I think some people will. I think some people are going to have a big problem with it.
Okay. I didn't have a big problem with it, but
no.
But I would rather she not be there. That's all.
Yeah.
It's just my, weird, own, my own geeky. Like, I try to turn off my that geek side of me.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's one of those instances where I think it hinders me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's fine.
Well, if it doesn't quite... it plays a little bit like fan service, or like, we're trying to give him a happy ending. We don't know who else to put across the table from him. Although, what if it was just like Maggie Gyllenhaal's skeleton? Like, propped up. Like a wig on. Nobody calls attention to it. That would actually be pretty sweet.
Where's your Harvey Dent now?
So, but it has to be Selina Kyle because, we're out of women. We killed Talia al Ghul and we blew up Gyllenhaal, so you're up, Hathaway. But it's like, it, again, it's just this idea of like, we have to give Bruce Wayne a happy ending. Literally.
By the way, you're up Hat the Way is my new band name.
to close off his story. But it doesn't necessarily, I don't feel like it jives with what all the other movies have been building to. And I'm not saying that like Batman needed to die, because this movie is about him coming to terms with like, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't have to die. That's not my mission in life. But for him to just walk away from being Batman and go to Florence with Catwoman isn't the ending that I was expecting, I guess.
With what money did for he that do this character? With,
oh, there was still some left. Or...
did they resolve that? I don't even...
Not his money, I don't think, because whatever his money was left to Alfred.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Disappointing, but not horrible. Maybe I like it. I don't know. I swear to God, I don't know. Before we started this podcast, I was like, oh, no, I think I liked it, even despite its problems. And maybe I still do. Like, while it was on, I was having an okay time. Yeah, I would cringe at certain things, like I said, but, it wasn't until it all kind of ended that I'm not sure that he stuck the landing.
Yep, I would agree.
Anyway, email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com or comment below, and we'll have a conversation about this movie. Good to have you back, Mike.
Thank you for having me back.
Thank you very much. Batman, you care to take us out?
I'll give you an Alfred instead.
All right.
Mr. Wayne, I would set you up with a chimpanzee. If that meant you, I'm doing my Nuns on a Run, I think. Thank you, everybody.